I think that they could use a little more video. That's my only, if I was going to give it a knock, I would say that that's the knock. I think that they ought to give you a call and see if they can do a little more video, because I want to see it in motion, right? Like, you know, these are people to watch and admire, and the fact that they're still, while I'm sure that helps with load time and performance of the website, which I can't imagine wasn't a consideration, it's kind of a shame. Like, I want to see them do their thing, and I would stay on the site, I think, longer as just a regular visitor if that was the case.
This episode is brought to you by my friends at Whoop. Yes, the Whoop strap is one of my favorite pieces of tech. Get real-time feedback on your sleep, training, recovery, and health, plus in-app coaching features to help you optimize performance. Sleep better, train smarter, recover faster, feel healthier, manage your stress. It's all there in the Whoop app on the Whoop strap. Just go to my special link at join.whoop.com/behindthebrand and get a great price and a new Whoop strap. All right, let's get back to the show. Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of the Billion Dollar Brand Podcast. I'm your host, Brian, my co-host, Bill, always looking amazing, back from Mississippi.
Thank you very much. Yes, your co-host, Vanna White. I'm here to turn the letters today.
You've got that Mississippi glow about you.
I do have that Mississippi glow. Mississippi was fantastic. You know what? I went to the Neon Pig, just to give a shout out to Mitch and his group down there. It was, it's the place that has America's best hamburger, voted America's best hamburger. And it was awesome.
Is it pork, like phenomenal. The name says?
No, but it has pork in it. It has some bacon in it as part of the mix. And it's truly, like, everything on the menu is pretty phenomenal. And there were a bunch of us that were down there, and so we ordered pretty much one of everything on the hamburger side and, like, cut them into quarters and just were sharing all around the table, and everything was better than the last bite. It was truly remarkable. So neat place to go and visit for sure.
I love to find great places to eat wherever I travel. What's your process? Like, how do you find these, like, great places?
So this one was a client recommendation. We actually were at lunch with our client, Blue Delta Jeans, down in Mississippi, and the hotel that we stay at there, the Hotel Tupelo, has an incredible restaurant down on the first floor that is also owned and run by the owner of the Neon Pig. And so in being there and having a chance to kind of connect with him, I learned about this other restaurant that he has. And it's kind of a famous thing. Like, it's kind of a big deal down there. And so we went to go check it out. And, you know, as is always the good indicator, it was packed solid when we walked in. You had to, like, scrounge a table, which is the best kind of marketing. And the food was delicious. I mean, we were, like, stuffing ourselves. It was awesome.
Mm. Yeah.
So if you're down in Tupelo, Mississippi, go check out the Neon Pig. It's amazing food.
I've been watching some of these Instagrammers and TikTokers who basically go from restaurant to restaurant and give their review. I'm cherry picking. There's a few of them that I follow. And I'll just start making a little list in my notes app, like, for, you know, West LA or somewhere in East LA or Orange County, San Diego. And I'm just having my little list. So, like, if I'm in meetings in that area, I'll pull up my notes app and see what I've already written down. And, like, I'll have little notes next to it, like, great sandwich, great pizza, great pasta, great, you know, great dinner, drinks with client. And that's how I've been doing it.
Oh, that's great. Love it. Love it. Love it.
Well, I've got a lot on my mind. A lot's happening on the interwebs right now.
Let's talk about it for sure. What do we got?
Well, the biggest thing that I think everyone's talking about is this new Apple iPad ad, the one that was super destructive, where they took all of our favorite sort of analog things, including acoustic guitar and cans of paint and toys and all of these things that we enjoy offline. And the ad just puts them in this giant crusher, like you'd crush a giant car, and it just smashes it to the thinnest degree. And I just felt like my hopes and dreams were being smashed at the same time as I watched all of these great things be like destroyed to smithereens. Did you see this?
I think it is Apple's first big tone deaf moment, I think, you know, and I can't think of them really hitting a whiff like this in a maybe ever. I don't know, but this was a big one. This is one of those where, you know, you could hear the echo chamber in the ad. It was funny. I did a post about it earlier today that's gotten already like 15,000 views and comments mm-hmm. aplenty, as you know, would imagine, because it's such a hot topic right now. And it's been really interesting. The people that are definitely divided. There's one group that says it's just as beautiful and artistic as every other Apple ad. The world's gotten too PC and, you know, you're overreacting. And the other group is, all I did was watch every hope and dream and aspiration of playing a piano and like painting and everything get smushed into nothingness, only to be told by, you know, the tech giant Apple, you don't need that anymore. You just need our product. And, perhaps it's the first like real black eye that Apple's gotten in terms of a marketing whiff. But boy, it was a big one. Did you see the Ad Age article that said that they're actually pulling it? They're not going to run it anymore because, the mea culpa, vibe was so necessary that they were like, okay, all right, that was bad. Sorry. Don't go anywhere. We'll just take it off the air.
Yeah. Can you imagine that? Probably call. Do you think Tim Cook called the agency? Was it, who was the agency? Was it Wieden and Kennedy or who was it, you think?
You know what? I don't know who did that. I don't know if it's Wieden. I don't know who did. That's a good question. Why don't we consult the interwebs real quick? Who made Apple's Crush commercial? I see director names, but I don't see agency just yet.
They've already scrubbed the internet. It's gone. They don't want to be attached to it.
Don't do it. Don't do it. But what's interesting is the level of people who responded. I mean, you had famous actors and actresses that got on that were just like, all right, enough. That's, you know, you turned a corner here. Like, no more. I find that fascinating that folks would come out of the woodwork against an advertisement like that, a TV spot like that. You know, that's unusual.
Yes, it struck a chord. So let's speculate a little bit. Like, so what do you think that conversation was, you know, with the creative team at Apple and the agency? I mean, it seems like they were focused, like in previous Apple campaigns, on a key feature and benefit. I remember the Apple 15 phone or something. It was everything about titanium, and it was titanium, and it was all titanium. That was like they're hanging their hat on the fact that it was titanium. Reminds me a little bit of the Mad Men episode. Remember when they were talking, Don Draper is talking to Lucky Strike cigarettes, and the FDA just come out with the announcement that they had to admit that smoking causes cancer or could lead to cancer. And he pitches this idea that Lucky Strike is different than all the others because it's toasted. Mm-hmm. It's toasted, dude.
I just don't know what we have to do to make these government interlopers happy. They tell us to make a safer cigarette. We do it. And then suddenly, that's not good enough.
Might as well be living in Russia.
Hmm. Damn straight.
Yep.
Hey. You know, this morning I got a call from our competitors at Brown and Williamson, and they're getting sued by the federal government because of the health claims they made.
Yeah, we're aware of that, Mr. Garner. But you have to realize that through manipulation of the mass media, the public is under the impression that your cigarettes are linked to certain fatal diseases.
Manipulation of the media? Hell, that's what I pay you for. Our product is fine. I smoke them myself.
My granddad smoked them. Mm-hmm. He died at 95 years old. He was hit by a truck.
I understand. But our hands are tied. We're no longer allowed to advertise that Lucky Strikes are safe.
So what the hell are we going to do? We've already funded our own tobacco research center to put this whole rumor to rest.
And that's a very good start. But it may not affect sales.
I might have a solution. At Sterling Cooper, we've been pioneering the burgeoning field of research. And our analysis shows that the health risks associated with your product is not the end of the world. People get in their cars every day to go to work. And some of them die. Cars are dangerous. There's nothing you can do about it. You still have to get where you're going. Cigarettes are exactly the same. So why don't we simply say, so what if cigarettes are dangerous? You're a man. The world is dangerous. Smoke your cigarette. You still have to get where you're going.
That's very interesting. I mean, if cigarettes were dangerous, it would be interesting.
Except they aren't. Is that your slogan? You're going to die anyway? Die with us?
Actually, it's a fairly well-established psychological principle that society has a death wish. And if we could just tap into that, the market potential is...
What the hell are you talking about? Are you insane? I'm not selling rifles here. I'm in the tobacco business. We're selling America. The Indians gave it to us for shit's sake.
Come on, Dad. Let's get out of here. Bright spot is, at least we know if we have this problem, everybody has this problem.
Don, I think maybe that's your cue.
Gentlemen, before you leave, can I just say something?
I don't know, Don. Can you?
The Federal Trade Commission and Reader's Digest have done you a favor. They've let you know that any ad that brings up the concept of cigarettes and health together, well, it's just going to make people think of cancer.
Yes, and we're grateful to them.
But what Lee Jr. said is right. If you can't make those health claims, neither can your competitors.
So, we got a lot of people not saying anything that sells cigarettes.
Not exactly. This is the greatest advertising opportunity since the invention of cereal. We have six identical companies making six identical products. We can say anything we want. How do you make your cigarettes?
I don't know.
Shame on you. We breed insect repellent tobacco seeds, plant them in the North Carolina sunshine, grow it, cut it, cure it, toast it.
There you go. There you go.
But everybody else's tobacco is toasted.
No, everybody else's tobacco is poisonous. Lucky Strikes is toasted.
Well, gentlemen, I don't think I have to tell you what you just witnessed here.
I think you do.
Advertising is based on one thing. Happiness. And you know what happiness is? Happiness is the smell of a new car. It's freedom from fear. It's a billboard on the side of the road that screams with reassurance that whatever you're doing, it's okay. You are okay.
It's toasted. I get it.
Yeah. And so this kind of reminds me of like a singular benefit statement. In this case, Apple saying it's thinner than anything else. We're going to show you visually, you know, kind of what we've done. We packed everything in that you love into this little unit as a metaphor, but it backfired.
Yeah, if you go back and you take a look at, I think it was the MacBook Air that they did the first time that they put into, you know, the envelope, the 9x12 envelope, mailing envelope, yeah. Right? And they have the little red string and the little wheels that, you know, you do the thing in. And they open that up and then they slide it out and it's sort of this ooh-ah moment, right? Like it's so thin it could fit inside this mailing label or mailing package. And that was really a great way to sort of show how much things... you know, how much they had gotten it to be small. In this case, I actually think it wasn't that they deviated from that message. I think the problem with it was a visceral one. I think what happened is everything got crushed, which was kind of interesting and beautiful, until it got silent. And in my opinion, what happened was is when they crushed the sound out of it, that's when everybody went, ouch. Like at that moment, it stopped being about, you know, look at this amazing distillation, right? Like we put all these things in. If they had done that, perhaps it might not have had the same reaction. Like if all of these things had been put into some sort of
like a waterfall cascading.
Yeah. But if it had been like, you know, sort of fed into this thing and then out comes this one perfect little apple drop and it hit something and went ding and became the iPad, I have a feeling that it might not have hit people the way that this did. But when it got done crushing, they had this incredible moment of silence. And that's what I think happened. I think people caught the silence as there went all my hopes, dreams, creative aspirations. And I think that really kind of hit a nerve.
Yeah. I think this could be another biz opportunity too. You know, I'm the idea guy. I have all these invention and the product ideas. But it's like, I mean, and this idea is not original or new. People have been talking about this for a long time. But it's like, because we've been so, like the last decade, reliant and heavy users of technology, social media, et cetera, we're up to here with it. We're getting saturated. We're overwhelmed. If you've got kids, it's a battle now to keep them off their devices. And you just think about the good old days when you didn't have the internet, you didn't have cell phones, and you got bored, either like in the car, just looking out the window at the scenery.
Yeah.
I talk about this with my son all the time, who's, you know, 15, just turned 16. And I go, you know, you can be bored for 10 minutes. It's okay.
Yeah.
This is sometimes when you get like the best ideas. You get bored, your mind starts going, and then you start thinking of cool stuff. Or, you know, you can use your imagination, like when you read a book with paper.
Laying down in the backseat of my mom's car, watching the telephone wires go high-low, there was like this rhythmic pattern to it. Billion-dollar dreams came out of that time, right? Like your brain's got nothing else going on, and you're sort of making these free-form associations on things, and that time is lost now. And it's,
yes,
I think, going to have a pretty profound impact. You know, we are making things better, not necessarily making things new, if that makes sense. And I'm curious to see where that goes, because innovation will find a way, nature will find a way. But, you know, I feel like at this moment, everybody's looking down.
Yeah. And so where's the opportunity? I mean, I've already heard of businesses like, you can put your phone into like this locked case and it has a timer on it. And you literally, you know, once you hit lock, you can't open it for extended period of time that you decide, like could be six hour timeout or 24-hour timeout. And you could put that phone away and you can't get to it. Or there's getaways where you're off the grid. People are creating experiences. So I think you'll see more and more of this as a trend. You know, call it analog or old school or off the grid, but people deliberately wanting to have no technology focused experiences where they're getting back to the basics, human interaction, you know, time in nature, somewhere where you don't have 5G, et cetera, I think is a big emerging category.
My friend Katie, a number of years ago, I think was the most insightful on this that I've heard anybody be. She said, and this was 2009, 2008, she said, the new display of wealth is going to be not being online. And she said it back then. She was like, it's going to be, it'll be the new Bentley is I don't have to be online. I have people that do that for me. I'm allowed to look up. I'm allowed to be present. And everybody else is like, you know, batshit crazy on my behalf. And at the time, I remember kind of laughing about the comment, like, you know, is it going to get that profoundly intrusive in our world? And, you know, fast forward all these years, and yeah, it has. And that comment has really stayed with me, because I think that that's true. And I think your point is really well made. There's a tremendous amount of opportunity for analog brand, or, you know, not even analog, just natural brand, like away from. I think that there are going to be retreats that start happening as people's anxiety and stress levels around, you know, constantly being on, constantly being connected, always being available, always feeling the need to respond, kind of hits its threshold. And I think you're right, you know, the pendulum is kind of swinging back that way. the more and more people are going to be seeking opportunities to truly disengage.
Yeah. How about you? What's on your mind lately?
That was the big one that I was thinking about this morning. Was that what? I don't have anything else off the top of my head. First and foremost, have you got another thing that we can kind of move to?
Yeah. So, do you know this gal on TikTok? Her name is Emily Zugue, and she is like the most incredible designer, but in the worst way. So she has a channel with 4 million followers. I'll pull it up here so you can see it. I love this gal. She's brilliant. So Emily's TikTok, you know, she's a designer. It says, "We make logos." And she has redesigned, you know, all these different logos from 7-Eleven to McDonald's to the NFL to, you know, Rover.com, just Windows, Microsoft, cereal. And she does it in the worst way. It's like, it's very badly designed, but on purpose.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so brilliant. And that brands are now reaching out to her to have her do the redesign of their logo. How does this strike you?
I think from a personal brand standpoint, it's great. My question, of course, is where is she ultimately going to take it, right? She's captured attention, and that's true. And brands are calling and having them, you know, having her do a goof on it. My question is where is she going to go with it? What does she ultimately want to get out of it? And from a personal brand standpoint, I think that's another subject that's worth discussing. There are so many people on social media that are really just desperate for the attention, but don't necessarily channel it somewhere. I had the opportunity to connect with somebody the other day that has over 1 million followers on YouTube and close to that on Instagram. And in talking with them, learned that they don't monetize, that they can't monetize on it. So the shtick that they have is really valuable, and it's gotten a tremendous amount of attention, but they're kind of struggling with what to do with it. And in fact, that was the call that they were making to me, was saying, "Hey, you know, I see you on these social media channels. Have you actually figured out a way to turn it into business?" And that's the first thing that I'm asking about her is where is she going? Do you happen to know the backstory?
Well, so without knowing much about Emily's other business, let's speculate and offer some of her advice without knowing any of the context of what she's doing or not doing. But let's offer her some blind advice, unsolicited advice. I mean, to me, the obvious thing to do is to create a little design agency, a branding agency, like Brand Boss HQ, where she could do, you know, brand redos and brand strategy, or even partner with someone like Brand Boss HQ, because she's probably got all this deal flow with some of these big brands. And if she actually needs help with execution, she could team up with someone like your agency who could actually do the work. She's like the deal flow, and you guys are the operators. I don't know.
Well, I'd be super curious to find out if she is a full-time designer, and if so, what kind of work she's doing, because I love the approach. Like, there's a part of me that wants to steal this and do, you know, like client training as a joke, because I think it would be really funny, and you teach them all the bad things that people say to you when you're an agency owner, because it's kind of along the same lines. But I don't know. I think her comedic style is brilliant. I'm now super curious to go and find out what her real design talent is, you know, and see how she's turning these things around. If this is the attention getting and she's driving to a particular point on it, I think it would be really fun to see where that was going. Or she's monetizing the hell out of, you know, interest in the fact that she has just become fun to watch. And, you know, that's enough.
I have another idea for her to how to monetize this. I think she could team up. Let's say it's 7-Eleven. I think she could do this brand redo or this logo redo of 7-Eleven and do like an in-store like merch launch, like kind of like a, what do they call that? A ghost kitchen. So she comes in, she does like a little pop-up store, and she redesigns 7-Eleven logo, or maybe a little line of merch, t-shirts, hats, whatever. And that is like a little campaign that 7-Eleven has store-wide for, you know, like third quarter or something. And they sell merch and she gets a rev share deal, or maybe they, you know, pay her a talent fee to design it. But I think doing something like that could be really fun because she's got a lot of fans, you know, almost 5 million, and she could help pull the product through. And if she shared revenue with 7-Eleven, for example, that could be a super cool collab because it would drive people to go into 7-Eleven who might not have otherwise gone in there. And likewise, it just raises awareness for the brand and for her. So it's sort of a win-win.
Yeah, an online store for her designs that, you know, people would become fans of, right? Like, hey, I never liked the such and such logo. And so I think that's a really funny take on it or whatever would be an easy transition.
But I'd put it in store too for a limited time. So it's like a limited merch, limited time to drive people into 7-Eleven so that 7-Eleven can really get the benefit.
Yeah.
So because that's what they want, right? Let's face it. They want more people to walk into a brick and mortar store. That's how they do their business.
I think this is a great opportunity to talk a little bit about deciding what you want to try to be. I think, you know, she really highlights what it is to have an original thought, like to sit down and give yourself, okay, like everybody else is doing this, I'll turn around and go the other direction. And I see so many businesses that are desperate to be online. You know, they talk about it all the time. They will pay a lot of money to teams to try to figure this out. And I, you know, without putting too much of a ding, oh, fuck it, I'm going to go ahead and ding them. Most of the groups that do it don't have a brain in their head about where they're taking these companies. They're just making more crap for people who are afraid that the crap that they're going to make isn't going to work. So they hire somebody else to make the crap so that they feel like there's some certain measure of accountability. I think at the end of the day, the
name
real
names,
the,
Bill, go ahead and drop bombs, man. Let's go. Don't hold back. I mean, anyone to hold back.
No, tact has never been necessarily my strong suit. Nonetheless, the point here,
names.
Though,
it, I want names. Who you're thinking of?
No, I'm not doing it. So, as you go into the market, though, I think it's really important that you know you have a particular tone of voice and that you build to it. Like nobody just wants to see your stuff. Like, yeah, okay, stuff. Maybe if you're a painter, right? Like, okay, maybe I want to see your stuff, but I really don't even want to see your stuff then. What I want to do is I want to watch you paint. Like, what's fabulous about this is it's comedic. It's dumb and it's silly and it's an interesting take on things. I wish I saw more of this from businesses. You know, there was a real estate company a number of years ago that made... Now, he was out of LA, and I'm sure that he had the budget to do this, but he was basically making music videos. I can't remember his name now off the top of my head. But what I remember was...
Jared Leto.
It was just showing the property, but it was like he had like a boy band that he created, and they would do like different dances, and they would sort of walk through the property, and they would talk about what made it awesome, and they were all doing it to these music tracks, and it was incredibly well-produced. It was... really fun to watch. You got a cool chance to see the inside of property, and it totally changed the dynamic of why would I watch this? And I don't think people ask themselves that question. I think brands really struggle with how to be interesting. I just think that they just don't get interesting.
Yeah. I have another idea for Emily and her brand collab. Maybe this is my last one, but the wheels started turning. So again, just think about what 7-Eleven might want. They want more people to walk into 7-Eleven and buy stuff, whatever, sure. Slurpees. What if you had like, you know, if you're an artist, come in and get a free Slurpee. And maybe they had a contest online where the whole community could participate. So, you know, whether you feel like you're an artist or not, you could, if you're 9 years old, you could draw the 7-Eleven logo and you submit it online with a hashtag, you know, post it on Instagram, whatever. And if you participated, if you created something and you posted it, then you could take that into 7-Eleven, show them your Instagram feed or whatever, and you could get a free Slurpee. So it's like kind of a win-win.
Yeah.
It would raise awareness for the brand, but also drive more people into 7-Eleven, be tied back to Emily's inspiration of, you know, just designing from the heart, whether you've got talent or not. I think Emily is super talented. She's, I'm sure, singing out of tune on purpose, which is also really hard to do.
Yeah.
But,
She does it well, though. She really does. It's good stuff to watch.
Another company that's been on my mind. I heard this story. Do you know this company, GoRuck?
No.
First of all, do you know what rucking is?
Is this like backpacking?
Yeah. So it's carrying around a heavy pack and walking around or hiking. Some people, I think, even run with it. But I think it's really designed to like walk around and hike in. And it's about carrying heavy things on purpose so that you can improve your health. I heard the story of the founder. His name is Jason McCarthy. Super inspiring. So Jason was, like many people around 2003, right after 9/11, wanting to do something for his country, decided to enlist in the U.S. Army and got into special forces, became this Green Beret, and spent time in Iraq and different places, Afghanistan, and had this experience in special forces. And then when he got out, was thinking about what to do. And, you know, he realized that all this training he did, carrying around heavy things in the military, benefited his health, both mental and physical, so much that he started building these little rucks for himself. And he also knew that other special forces friends and colleagues would do the same, like to stay in great shape. They would go to like a custom, cut and sew place and have special things stitched together for them. And so as he was picking up on this trend, he thought, I'm going to start this company called GoRuck. And they're basically, it's like this weighted vest that you wear and you can go all around and, improve your fitness and your stamina. And then they've expanded to like different gear. They've got footwear now, apparel.
Yeah, this is a big brand. They've got a ton of stuff.
Yeah. The thing that struck me about Jason's philosophy is they are making or trying to make products that basically last a lifetime. So where other companies are thinking about planned obsolescence, like they are not so focused on the manufacturing or, the stitches coming unstitched at some point or things falling apart. I mean, sometimes you're happy about the fact that your customers have to buy things over and over again from you. That's how you stay in business. That's how you improve your bottom line. And, you go from X to a $1 billion brand. In GoRuck's case and in Jason's case, I heard him say, I couldn't care less. I couldn't care less about the bottom line. I couldn't care less about, money and profits. I just want to make an amazing product that doesn't let my customers down. And he was kind of going back to this idea when he was in the field, when he was with his friends. He goes, you look to your left, you look to your right. Those are the people that are counting on you and you don't want to let down. And so I'm making products for them. And so if I make a shoe that falls apart when someone's, going to war, it could cost them their life. And so that's not what we're about. And same goes with any of the things that we manufacture. And so he's really got this mentality, he's defining the brand for what it is. I was just so impressed. And because when you have that singular target, no pun intended, on the elite military, I mean, that's the tip of the spear, right? And that translates down to high-performing athletes. And then, like the weekend warrior like me who appreciates good products that don't fall apart. But maybe let's take a second. Let's look at a site and do a little bit of, a evaluation here on how they're doing. So that's the backstory, but let's go through this for a second. What are your thoughts when you see the site?
First off, I love the fact that they come right out with a person, not the product, right? Welcome to GoRuck. And then they introduce Tia Claire Toomey, whose name I probably just butchered, mom, entrepreneur, one of the greatest athletes of all time. I love that. The brand is out of its own way right off the bat. It's saying that they care more about their clients than they do about themselves. And I think that that's fantastic. Also, super simple, easy to get through, clean, clear design. I love the fact that they use the arrowhead as a key element in their marketing. And I love the fact that they, you know, are singularly dedicated. Like, these people are out there doing it. They are physically fit. They are doing their thing. You know, it's not until you get down into sort of the what is rucking that you start seeing people who aren't elite athlete, right? And that, I think, is also a really nice piece. So you've got, you know, it's by these folks, for these folks, in terms of the brand itself and where it's going. And then there's this nice little inroad for, hey, if you're new to this, if you're just trying to get started, there's room for you here too. Let us show you how this can work. I think the brand has done a really nice job of balancing that.
Yeah, and I get the impression that this is for hardcore folks, right? I mean, just look at the industry. You got what looks like the CrossFit Games, you know, someone pushing a sled really hard. You've got this other dude picking up what looks like a super heavy sandbag. You've got more women lifting heavy weights, again, CrossFit kind of stuff. But also, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm hardcore like this, but this appeals to me because it's very aspirational. It's mm-hmm. like, wow, okay, if these folks are doing this, you know, maybe, I don't know, it bridges the gap of trust. Like, I don't know, if I go buy a pair of like Hoka shoes, I own a pair of Hoka shoes, but it's like walking on marshmallows, mm-hmm. and it's probably not that great for my feet. But if I'm looking at these GORUCK shoes, it looks like they're more built for like the terrain and for doing hard shit. And it's like, okay, if that's my angle, that's probably a better way to go. Almost convinced of the legitimacy, because I see how awesome and serious they are.
Mm-hmm. I think that they could use a little more video. That's my only, if I was going to give it a knock, I would say that that's the knock. I think that they ought to give you a call and see if they can do a little more video, because I want to see it in motion, right? Like, you know, these are people to watch and admire, and the fact that they're still, while I'm sure that helps with load time and performance of the website, which I can't imagine wasn't a consideration, it's kind of a shame. Like, I want to see them do their thing, and I would stay on the site, I think, longer as just a regular visitor if that was the case.
Yeah, I just popped over to their YouTube channel. So they have 31,000 subscribers. I'll bet they have more fans and community people showing up to events in aggregate than they do on this YouTube channel. Yeah, you're right. It looks like they're posting, you know, a day ago, 9 days ago, a month ago. But you're right. Yeah, there's maybe a bigger opportunity. These are only like 1 minute little clips. So here's a 19 minute video of a, looks like an event or something. Yeah, I agree with you. I think there's so much opportunity to storytell. And
yeah, for sure.
I have bias, of course, but there's no better way to do that with video.
No, video is king. It will always be king. I think until some sort of 3D immersion takes its place, but nonetheless, it's still, that's a great brand. Love it. I'm going to go buy some of their stuff.
How about this whole mass blocking of celebrities? Have you heard about this? What's happening?
No, I haven't. Tell me what it is.
So the Met Gala happened, what, on Sunday or something? I'm not even sure what day, probably over the weekend. And there's this influencer, her name is Hailey Bailey, and she was dressed up basically as, she had some sort of like elaborate outfit on, like she was, what's that? What's the reference? Let Them Eat Cake. Who said that?
Oh, it was Marie Antoinette.
She was dressed as Marie Antoinette. And so the Met Gala, do you know what the Met Gala is?
I do, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's first of all by invite only. It's $75,000 a ticket when you get invited. So it's like, and like Anna Wintour has to personally invite you. Otherwise, you can't attend. So it's very exclusive, very expensive. Apparently, it's a fundraiser, so who knows where this money goes. But anyway, people wear these extravagant outfits and outrageous, and it's a bit of a fashion show, right? And so this influencer, Hailey Bailey, gets invited she's kind of a spokesperson to you. Like, she does hosting and announcing. So she's not like a super talent, but she's more like a host.
Mm-hmm.
And she dresses as Marie Antoinette, and she has her little on-camera moment. And she's sort of like looking right into the camera and saying, "Let them eat cake." Well, the internet goes apeshit.
And did she actually say the words, "Let them eat cake"?
She actually said that. It's become this meme. And now there's this mass campaign to cancel all celebrities. Like, deliberately, people are saying, fuck them. Let's go and block every single one of their, you know, entitled asses. And, you know, because that's the way that we can sort of shut down the people who don't care about you anyway. And so there's these people all across. I've been seeing it everywhere, like saying, here's who we're canceling today. Go and block Tom Brady and J-Lo and Taylor Swift and The Tonight Show.
They were the ones that made them popular, right? Like, they understand that they celebrated their contribution by going to NFL games, or sorry, to NFL games, little nod there to Emily, or to movies, or to concerts. Like,
yeah,
they understand that this is hypocrisy. Yes?
Well, yeah, but there's been this great awakening, apparently, where, you know, like, you poked the bear one too many times, and now we are aware of you. And so back to that classic Disney movie, A Bug's Life, if you remember that classic mm-hmm. tale, when the ants become aware of the grasshoppers who
right.
are oppressing them, and they say, hey, guys, there's more of us than there are of them. They may seem stronger, but if we all unite and act together, we can defeat these bully grasshoppers. And so this is what's happening now. There's a legitimate campaign to block. And so, and they're showing the countdown clocks too, going backwards, reversing. And these celebrities are losing followers by the millions. I think, multi-millions. So like the Kardashians are on the hit list and like just all of these usual suspects.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I don't have a problem with the Kardashians being on the hit list. I think that's just fine. That's just my, I see, now watch, I'll get canceled next because of that.
No, you've got to be among the elite, like, you know, there's the haves and the have-nots. And they're likening it to the French Revolution, you know, where the people revolted against the elite upper class.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, I'm just reporting
there was a little more to it back then than there is today, but I, you know, yeah. Far be it for me to get in the way of a good woke movement. All right, so the best thing that I've seen so far is a play that they did where they took the entry scene from The Hunger Games where they were like, this moment is so important, it cannot be understated or overstated, right? And it's this introduction of them just walking on in their costumes in that movie and like how profoundly ridiculous that whole notion was. Anyway, someone had edited that bit of The Hunger Games and then put the Met Gala people walking in between. It was really, really funny. Whoever did it, bravo. That was well done.
Yeah. Again, you know, these are just little signals to me, little cracks in the zeitgeist, little cracks in the system. It's very, very interesting what, and these are younger people than me, you know, a couple generations, like a couple of decades younger than me, who are coming to their senses. It's like, you know, to me, it's like obvious. Yeah, of course. You wouldn't give anyone with superstar status any more credibility than you would anyone else, unless you respect their talent like you do with Michael Jordan or something.
Sure.
But it's like, yeah, of course they're ridiculous, of course. But like younger people, you sort of take for granted that maybe they haven't come to that conclusion yet
mm-hmm.
and that they've been just eaten whatever they've been served. And so there's a bit of an awakening happening, which is, I think, healthy and great.
I think that reemergence happens over and over again. What is yeah. going to be interesting about it, though, is of course there will be leaders that come out of that. There will be people who take the stage, and there will be people who are innovation experts. You know, the next Elon Musk or what have you. There will be political figures. There will be
yeah.
singers and the rest of it. So you can't tamp down celebrity. It just changes shape and form. but there will always be celebrity. There will always be, you know, someone who can, you know, lift something more than anybody else. There will always be somebody who can X, whatever X is, better, you know, sing better, act better, perform better, swim faster, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I agree. History is an algorithm. It repeats. I remember, you know, in my day, you know, I looked to people like Eddie Vedder. Pearl Jam was doing it differently, right? The Fuck the Man and like the whole grunge movement, and when they felt oppressed by Ticketmaster, they said, you know, screw it, we're going to go audience direct. And that was like revolutionary to like bypass Ticketmaster and sell directly to the fans.
Yeah.
And thankfully, you know, Eddie and the band have stayed true to that, like their whole career. It's like amazing. But I just find it interesting that these cycles are recycling now, and I'm witnessing it. It's just, it's fascinating.
Yeah, I it's very much like the 70s, you know, or 60s happening all over again, just with a different, with a different tonality and a different flavor. And those of us that were old enough to sort of see the tail end of that and remember what it was, it's kind of like having a front row seat to the, to a reinterpretation, right? Like Hollywood remade it. And now, you know, we're seeing it this time through some other director's point of view.
Yeah. Speaking about like sort of a derivative or iteration on a classic, have you seen what Coke did with their ads? The whole Coke spilling Coke out.
And and I love it. I think that that's a really fun twist. The ones that reverse from spilling it to find that it's someone reuniting and like grabbing a hug, and then the bottle becomes irrelevant and the Coke spills all over.
Yeah. So I think that's kind of maybe an example of a brand with their ear to the ground and trying to be less tone deaf and understanding people don't care about your product. People care about people and experiences. And I think that was a pretty good attempt to convey that. I like that ad quite a bit because, you know, if you didn't see it, you've got like people running to embrace who maybe haven't seen each other in a long time. The one girl's holding a Coke, open bottle of Coke, Coca-Cola, and she's running to her, looks like boyfriend, and they slow-mo, and then they twirl around, and then the bottle kind of tips over, and she spills out all the drink, but she couldn't care less. She's just so happy to see this person, and I don't know, I just thought that was a great acknowledgement of what seems to be happening, a new trend in advertising, and that is a focus on stuff that really matters.
I think Coke is one of those brands that has done that for a long time. You know, you go back far enough to I'd Like to Teach the World to Sing, right? Mm-hmm. And that was about connection. And then you go to, you know, even the Polar Bears was just about fun, playful, right? And then there was that fantastic animated sequence that they did about fun. And, you know, you sort of were floating like a bubble in the carbonation around. I think that that brand has done a really nice job of always staying true to who and what they are. You know, they sell fizzy brown liquid. It's not, you know, they're not solving world peace. So I think the whole thing that they've done about, and I think you put it very beautifully, staying out of their own way is sort of a part of the Coca-Cola brand and has been, in my opinion, for a long, long time. I mean, I think they kind of lost their way there for a little bit in the early 2000s and then sort of recentered themselves and came back to the fold. And they've always done a really nice job when they do produce work to, you know, keep a high-end production about just that idea, right? We're selling connection and happiness and satisfaction and like joy. And that seems to be the thing that they're grounded in. Like, this is a fun experience and we want to celebrate fun experiences.
Have you seen, switching gears a little bit, did you see what pro surfer Kelly Slater did? He launched a new brand of skincare, sun care, basically suntan lotion, called Freaks of Nature. Have you seen this?
No, but I love the name.
Yeah, let's weigh in. I'll pull up the product. I want you to weigh in on the packaging, since this is your side of the house. And this is a hat tip to my friend Oren John, who posted about this earlier. Oren's another brand guy in packaging and design. He's brilliant. And he posted this, and I was like, oh, I got to do a deeper dive. So if you don't know who Kelly Slater is, he is one of the most prolific professional surfers in the world. He's the GOAT, one of the GOATs. I've been doing it for so long. He's just amazing. He launched a new sunscreen brand, and it's meant basically to stay on your face. If you saw that meme of Mark Zuckerberg when he went foil surfing, his whole face was covered in zinc oxide. Like, he was just like white as a ghost. This is a similar kind of product where it's meant to stay on when you're in the water. It's for surfers or bodyboarders or whoever's going to be in the water forever. Maybe even like people who play water polo.
Mm-hmm.
But check out the packaging. It's pretty different. Pulling it up here. See all this blue stuff?
Yeah.
Like blue on orange. How does that strike you?
I think the packaging is nice. I don't understand why they chose the hard contrast piece. Like, why choose colors that vibrate?
Right. That's curious, right? And even the shape of the packaging is interesting. I mean, it almost looks like, if you can't see because you're just listening, it looks like a container of deodorant. It's like a small little cylindrical, maybe 4-inch cylinder that you pop the top off and roll under your arm. But in this case, there's a push
dispenser,
bottle
yeah.
dispenser on the top, and it would take your sunscreen out. Curious, right?
Yeah, it is. Is there a reason behind it?
I don't know what the reason is, but the thing that struck me first was the vibrating text, blue on orange. But at the same time, I mean, I wonder if it's a tactic to stand out. I mean, there's nothing like this on the market that I can think of in terms of sunscreen right now. It's the bottles, the packaging is a lot shorter. Most, if like you look at the popular brands, they're tall and skinny like a spray can. This is tiny that might fit in like a surfer's backpack or even fit in your pocket if you needed to. But the colors are funky. There's a darker blue and like another monotone lighter blue with bright orange text.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting. If the theory is no one cares to read it, they just need to see it, then I think it's a strong, bold move because the brand is completely unique on the shelf that way. And by putting something together that wouldn't normally go together, it does create a vibration in terms of the color that helps it stand out. I mean, you can't miss it. You also probably can't read it because the contrast is just that way. But, if the thought process is you've already decided to buy it before you see it, then all you need to do is identify that it's on the shelf. Of course, legally, you have to have the contents on the package, but that doesn't mean that they have to be legible in the traditional sense of the word. I mean, if they're on there and they are legible, then that's fine. If he tries to do that as a website page, the website folks, the legibility folks on website are going to come knocking.
Yeah. I think this is another example of the advantage of being an influencer or having influence and launching your own brand. So Kelly's got this following that's big enough. I mean, he's not like everywhere, but he's most everywhere he needs to be. He's certainly well-known in the surf community. And so people will probably seek out his product just because they know it's his. And the name too is kind of like the Go Ruck brand. It's for hardcore ruckers, right? Mm-hmm. This is not for like, you're not going to screw around. Like, this is only if you want to carry a reasonably heavy pack around everywhere.
Yeah.
Same thing with sunscreen. Freaks of Nature has that name that sort of jumps out at you and slaps you in the face, So I like the naming. I think it's clever and catchy. It kind of also says it's for those hardcore folks.
I like the fact that it's bold. I wish that more brands would do things that were bold. I think it's what's missing. It takes a tremendous amount of bravery to launch a new product, and so few brands actually act brave past that first movement. They take the safe route. They look just like everybody else. They say things that are safe. They don't want to rock the boat. They just want to make sure that they get liked and that they are bought, and you know, that becomes culture, right? That becomes mm-hmm. like the culture of the brand is, you know, let's play it safe and not rock the boat and not risk anything. And I think more brands need to avoid that and escape that.
I just pulled up their Instagram page. So they're growing their Instagram following now, only just under 2,000 followers, not great, but the packaging is unique.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. It's definitely a different take on things.
Bright orange with bright blue, or bright blue with bright orange.
My design teacher would not have approved. It would have been a swift C+.
Yeah.
But sometimes that's what's required to stand out. Sometimes you got to go, you got to zig when they zag.
Yeah. Maybe we can get Kelly Slater on the show. We can ask him what he was thinking.
That's right. Maybe we can. All right, Kelly, what were you thinking about this? Talk to us. If you see this, DM us. Let us know.
Is that the pod for today?
I think that's the pod for today.
As always, I mean, I can't believe that people don't pay for this. I can't believe we're dropping all this wisdom for free. I mean, I would pay at least $1 billion for this information.
At least $1 billion, which, as you remember, is at least 1,000 times better than $1 million.